On this episode of Baseball Barbecast, we talk about the bats. Those weird-looking bats the Yankees were using. What's the story behind them? Will we start to see them all across Major League Baseball? We talk about the best teams from the weekend. The Padres look great. The Dodgers look great. The Yankees look great. Most of the other teams, not so much. But we recap all of the action from the first weekend of the 2025 regular season on this episode of Baseball Barbecast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbecast, the only baseball podcast in the world that likes big bats and shall not lie. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and we're talking torpedoes.
Oh yes, bat chat has arrived. No matter how much preparation you do for a baseball season, you never know what the first weekend of action is going to give you. And sure enough, here we are on our first Monday of the regular season talking about silly shaped bats. That will of course be our first topic, but we have so much more to get to. The Padres mopped the Braves, the Cardinals swept the Twins, the Dodgers swept the Tigers, no surprise there, and so much more baseball that we have to get to. But come on, if you're listening to this podcast, if you're listening to any baseball podcast on this Monday, you know what we're going to start with. Our opener today is the bats.
All right. So, the bats, they look big, these big bats. They're not actually bigger, these
good
bats.
Good place to start. It is an good place to start.
Let's begin there. What happened this weekend, right? Mm-hmm. The New York Yankees obliterated the Milwaukee Brewers on Saturday and on Sunday. On Saturday, the Yankees hit 9 home runs, the most the Yankees have ever hit in their 122-year history as a franchise. Now, granted, for half of that time, like, no one hit home runs but Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig. Mm-hmm. But still, a lot of home runs. And then on Sunday, they hit a bunch more home runs. I think 4 on Sunday in a 12-3 win. Now, on Saturday, on the broadcast, Yankees broadcaster Michael Kay pointed out that Jazz Chisholm was using a bizarrely shaped bat. The shape of the bat was more bulbous and thicker around the sweet spot of the barrel before thinning out towards the end. Most bats in our minds grow from the handle to the end in somewhat of a consistent manner, with the barrel then remaining even to the end. This was different, where it was almost shaped like an elongated bowling pin, is how I would describe it. Mm-hmm. These bats, nicknamed torpedo bats, went viral on the internet machine and were given credit quite lazily for Yankees' home run barrage. I think that it's also worth noting that over the course of the weekend, a number of other major leaguers were seen using these bats, not just the Yankees. Francisco Lindor used this. Ryan Jeffers on the Twins used this. Junior Caminero on the Rays used this. And so even though the Yankees were getting all the hype, it does appear that this is more than just a Bronx situation.
Mm-hmm. So I want to get into some of the reporting that you did, because you already wrote something about this and kind of asked around about the origins of this, not just for the Yankees, but around the league. But I think it's also important for those who haven't necessarily seen it and are thinking, well, wait a minute, what do you mean the bats are bigger? That doesn't feel legal. Well, they're not bigger. So this is very important.
Yeah, yeah.
Because yeah, it is, I would say, almost an optical illusion. The way, correct, when you look at the bat, because the way that it is rounded, and as you say, it looks like a bowling pin, which I think that is kind of the best description, that if you haven't even seen them yet, I think that is what is most accurate. The difference is that the barrel, the widest part, which is regulated, there are rules regarding how the diameter of the bat in the MLB rule book, the circumference, yep, that there is a rule for that. However, where that widest part is lower down on the bat. So that doesn't mean it is larger, but it does look like it, because then it rounds and becomes skinnier at the end. So it looks unusual, because as you said, for forever, the bats have grown linearly as they go from the handle,
correct,
to the edge of the bat. So it makes it look like it is larger. Now, however, now why? Now here's another good question. Why? What is the goal of a bat like this? Because this is part of your reporting and also part of specifically for the players that are using this, because as we should point out, not every Yankee was using it. Aaron Judge was not using it, and Aaron Judge did just fine, as Aaron Judge gave a great quote after the words. You were there for that, so you could talk about that.
Let's talk about the Aaron Judge quote very quickly, because Aaron Judge, on the record, is a boring guy. And that's understandable, because if he says anything remotely spicy and the words get slightly taken out of context, it's unnecessary fuego on his head. And so he usually plays things pretty straight. What he said yesterday was one of the more punchy things I've ever heard Aaron Judge say, where he says, he's asked about the bats and he goes, "I think my track record speaks for itself." And like, yeah, dude, why would Aaron Judge alter anything about his process or his life after what he's done the last few years? And the last couple days, he has 4 home runs already through 3 games. He's Aaron Judge. He doesn't need these bats, right? But why would someone need these bats? So I actually want to talk about golf for a really quick second. I don't like golf. I don't play golf. But in golf, there is a history of club fitting, with the idea being that every person's swing, the biomechanics specific to the individual, should determine what type of club you are using, how that club is fashioned, the height of the club, the weight of the club, the balance of the club. That has never been seriously applied to baseball. It has been applied more so for handles. We've seen different, you know, there's an axe bat where the handle's not a circle, or one where there's a flare at the end. Over the last couple of years, I've heard rumblings about kind of copy and pasting the idea of club fitting into baseball. And Volpe is a great example of this. He tends to make contact further, we'll say, up the bat, closer to his hands. And so moving the sweet spot towards where a specific player is making more contact makes obvious sense. And that is one of the many reasons why this is not some sort of cheat code, right? If you were to give Anthony Volpe's bat to Aaron Judge, it probably wouldn't work for him, because the barrel is tailored to the player. Now, why is it good to have more bat in that spot? That's just 11th grade physics, right? Force equals mass times acceleration. If you upgrade the mass in a specific location, it's going to create more impact on the baseball.
Mm-hmm. Now, that said, I think this is a good time to kind of zoom out, unless you want to provide any more context, because you have this in your story, and it is important to know that, as we already mentioned, we've already seen other players using it, but it does sound like around the league, this is something that other teams have already been experimenting with, but it seems like the Yankees were the first team to break through and give it a try in terms of the players that are at the major league level and willing to give it a shot.
Yeah, there's two other things with that. One is that the idea that the Yankees created these bats, I think, is a little bit of a misunderstanding. Mm-hmm. Aaron Lenhart, who was an analyst for the Yankees and is now a field coordinator with the Marlins, seems to have been the brainchild behind the Yankees' specific goal to implement this. Mm-hmm. But it's not as if this gentleman was whittling away in a woodworking shop in an underground laboratory beneath Yankee Stadium, right? Mm-hmm. To create a bat like this, there needs to be collaboration with the bat manufacturers. It's not as if the Yankees have a store of raw lumber lying around that they can work with. No, they need to bring a design to Marucci or Victus or Louisville Slugger or any of the other number of bat companies. And what that means is, because those bat companies are not going to create proprietary tech for specific teams, at least that's my understanding, those bats then become available to everybody else, right? I don't think they're being sold right now. I think that, like, for the public, I think they will be in time. And this brings up a slightly interesting question, and maybe this is me being a dorky cycling fan. The rule in cycling, where technology is like vital to the whole operation, anything a team uses needs to be available to the public for purchase. And I actually think that is a good rule in terms of baseball equipment, because it removes the idea of proprietary tech equipment. If you have something, it needs to be available, right? And I think that that is a good way to think about it. But that is essentially where we're at already. And I think the Yankees, where they succeeded, was getting the buy-in. They got buy-in from the players. They got a overwhelming number of the guys to agree to use them. And so it seemed like it was the Yankees brainchilding this whole thing. Because they're the Yankees, it got even more press and more pub and more zip behind it. You had, you know, the Barstool doofus calling an emergency meeting to ban the torpedo bats because he's a Red Sox fan. Like, that doesn't happen if the Reds are the ones using the bats.
Yes.
Right? And I think that that is part of the context here. The Yankees do not have a competitive advantage with the specific equipment. It's that they are good at what they do. And I wrote this in my story. It is a massive organizational victory to convince that many players to use it. And what we're going to see now, after the Yankees obliterated the Brewers pitching, which was horrible over the weekend, more players around the league are going to start trying this.
Yes. So this, now we have to zoom out to two other parts about this. Okay. So the first thing is it was the perfect storm of result and team involved to spark a level of fury and panic that the Yankees are cheating. This is unfair. Oh my God. And every team's just going to hit 10 home runs now. Like, all of that was a perfect storm for a level of response that was both predictable and just nonsensical, right? So that is understandable. And
I was at all of these games.
Yes.
And with all due respect to the Brewers, who have a ton of pitching injuries right now.
Yes.
And friend of the program, Aaron Civale. I mean, they were terrible. They did not execute. I actually wrote out all of the pitches that were hit for home runs on a list.
Yeah.
It's like half of them, more than half of them, are like 89 mile an hour cutters elevated in the strike zone. They were horrible this weekend.
Yes.
Nestor was peeing his pants and discombobulated. Four of the home runs that were hit on Saturday were off dudes making their MLB debuts.
Mm-hmm. Right. Connor Thomas. I mean, like, it was...
Patrick. And then Judge, who hit four home runs, didn't use the bat.
And is Aaron Judge. So it's like, there's a good chance Aaron Judge hits four homers in a weekend. So all of that is important context. And by the way, the other important context is there's also other reasons why the baseballs could be going over the fence. As we know in Major League Baseball, sometimes the baseballs are a little more livelier. And so far through one weekend, you can look at the home runs per game. It's a little bit up from last year. So that's another thing to consider too. But keeping it on the bats, okay? This is the last thing I think I really want to talk about here. Is not just the specific result for the Yankees, is the premise here, which is that let's say that the fact that this is legal, right, is what is good about this or what is bad about this? Because to me, what I am surprised by in the reaction, I'm not surprised by people are mad that the Yankees are hitting a bunch of home runs, even if it's the correlation is not necessarily makes any sense, right? I think the notion here that batters are trying to fight back and find ways to make contact more often consistently is a good thing. This whole sport over the last 10 years has gotten so out of whack in the way that pitchers just have such an advantage when we talk about technology, when we talk about improvement, when we talk about swing and miss. We know that this is the direction that the sport has gone to. If bats like this were giving batters the ability to hit balls 125 miles an hour with consistency, that would be that's a problem, because that is turning the bats into something that they are not. If bats like this are helping certain hitters make more contact, that's great. That's a good thing for the sport. Like, honestly, like if there's a way that we are not fundamentally changing the sport, right? We've talked about how can we have more balls in play? How can we have a more balanced version of the game where the league isn't striking out 22, 23, 24% of the time? If this is a version, a small change that is going to happen in the sport that is going to get more balls in play, not necessarily more home runs, but more balls in play, more balls that are struck in a way that creates more interesting action, I don't really see how that's a bad thing. And honestly, it's funny because it would really be bailing out the whole league in general, right? And if you think the league is going to ban this, if it gets the intended result for the hitters of making more contact, it's not an automatic cheat code of, okay, great, now I'm swinging an Easton stealth comp and every time the ball goes in the air, it's a home run. Yeah, that would be a problem. That would also not make the product better. But if it is helping more hitters just make more contact, more effective contact consistently, I think that's a good thing. And I think that's a great way for the league to adjust and for us to end up in a more healthy, balanced part of the sport in a very natural way that doesn't fundamentally alter how the sport is played. Yeah. Like, I think that's a great thing. And I remember having a conversation with our OG friend, Kieran Lovegrove. who I remember
former
sitting
minor
with
leaguer
for the original minor leaguer of the Barbacast, of course, one of our favorite people. And I remember having lunch with him a few years ago, and we were talking about, okay, pitching is out of control. How are we going to change this? And Kieran was just like, why not bigger bats? And I was like, why not bigger bats? Now, this, again, as we described, this is not bigger bats, but changing the bats is kind of such an obvious thing to help hitters. Like, it is so, it's yeah. almost so obvious that it's amazing that we've gotten to this point. And I don't want to overreact to think, because maybe it's we're going to still end up with the same league OPS as we did last year. I don't know. Maybe it's too early to say. I just want to say that the premise of this, I am encouraged and excited about the possibility that this is helping hitters, because as long as it's not, we're not ending up back at, in, you know, levels of baseball that is not necessarily a good product, I think it could help the whole sport. And I really do believe that.
Also, if this becomes widespread, pitchers are going to fight back. So yeah. If Anthony Volpe is moving the thick part of his barrel closer to the handle, well, guess what? Guys are going to stop busting him inside and start working him away mm-hmm. off of the end of the bat where the barrel's not. And then he'll have to make that adjustment. There's a constant give and take here, a constant push and pull. And maybe we're just anti-alarmist, but I think you're right. As a whole, this is interesting. This is compelling. Being asked, do you like the bats, is a silly question. But I think the answer is yes. The idea that technology generally in our sport, pushing the envelope, is an interesting, good thing. Now, sometimes it goes too far and makes the product worse in some ways. But I think right now, I'm pro weird bats. I'm pro torpedoes. Mm-hmm. I almost guarantee you that next week, when we do this Monday show, the number of players trying these bats in games is going to quintuple.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to explode now. Course. And that's because players are creatures of habit and also pretty simple, right? If that dude's doing it and it's working for him, well, I'll give it a shot. And some, like Rafi Devers, right, who's 0 for 9,000 right now, wants to fix anything, he's just going to pick up one of these and give it a go.
They might give it a shot. But to your point, too,
Alex Bregman once shaved his mustache in the middle of the game because he was slumping. You don't think these guys are going to start trying the torpedo bats?
And it'll be interesting because, as has been made clear, certain hitters are going to be more comfortable and more suited for this than others, and they're going to find that out. The fact that all of this might be happening literally during the season as opposed to during spring training is maybe the funniest part of this to me, that it takes the Yankees hitting 9 homers in a game, even though half of them were Aaron Judge and he didn't need the help. Like, all of it is silly and also speaks to just like how baseball players operate. That is also part of the amusing part of this. But that was my bigger picture takeaway of this. And maybe it's too much of an overreaction and this will not even really be that relevant, but I agree with you. I think we'll start seeing it more and we'll see how it changes things, if anything.
This story is not over. That's for sure.
No.
I am fascinated. I would like to get my hands on one of these.
Sure.
And take it to the cage. Mm. You know, the cage that I go to all the time.
And then you'll be like,
see how it feels.
If only I had one of these.
If I had one of these, dude, I'd still be playing. Yeah. Just very quickly here before we take a break, let's just run through the rest of this Yankee series.
Yeah, I was going to say, any other. I mean, the homers I was at pretty much tell the story. I mean, they whooped them. It's not like the Yankees pitching was great.
Carlos Rodon was good in game one.
Carlos was good.
He's throwing this new weird funky sinker that he learned 10 days ago. Which is hilarious. It was very effective. It looks like a good pitch for him. This is another trend across the league. You're going to see pitchers just are adding pitches to kind of deepen their arsenals right now. Keep an eye on that. But the Yankees win that first game. Devin Williams was shaky in his first outing for the Yankees, their new closer. But I'm not too worried about that. We talked about that, I think, on Friday's show. Game 2 and Game 3, those were both obliterations. I think Volpe and Jazz are the two guys I'm most excited about. I know those are the torpedo bat kings, but they just both looked really good at the plate, really solid. Max Fried, not great in his debut. That doesn't particularly worry me.
Some defense. And then there was...
Yeah. Okay, Yankees, so let's defense. Talk about that.
Once again.
Hidden by the torpedo bat 9 home run barrage, Yankees made 5 errors on Saturday, the most errors they've made in a game since 2018, which is funny because you're like, didn't they just make 1,000 errors in the World Series? The three errors they made in that game were the only three errors they made in that game. The three you remember?
Yes, right. Okay, only three. In the inning? Great. I mean,
you get my point. But half of them were Pablo Reyes at third base. Oswaldo Cabrera has looked like he's going to be fine over there. I'm not, like, Pablo Reyes, I don't think will be on this team in a month. And so it's not.
And didn't Dominguez
that big of a deal?
I don't know, man. The Yankees.
Dominguez is just walking a ton. But yeah, the Yankees are good. They're interesting.
I meant defensively.
Let's see them play a real baseball team. And that's not Brewers shade. Like, the Brewers are just banged up on the pitching side right now. Yeah. I think the Brewers are still pretty good. They're missing so many arms. They're starting Elvin Rodriguez today in their home opener, who I think has, what, 7 major league appearances?
Yeah. It's not awesome. I mean, Jake Bauer's pitched twice. That's kind of all you need to know. And he has the lowest ERA on the team. So that's how the Brewers series went for them. And the Yankees are undefeated.
One quick thing here. Aaron Judge, who hit 3 home runs on Saturday, walked up to the dish in his 4th at-bat of the day and hit a ball off the top of the wall that would have been gone, according to StatCast, at George Steinbrenner Field in Tampa, which is confusing and bizarre, and we need to call Mike Petriello about this, but it was almost a 4-homer game, and then it was almost a 5-homer game, because in his 5th at-bat, which was against position player Jake Bowers, he just top-spun the crap out of one to the warning track and left. So there was, you know, a couple more feet here and there, and Judge has the first 5-homer game in MLB history.
And then on Sunday, 1-for-1 with a homer and 3 walks. I imagine that Judge will start getting walked all the time. I know Jazz is swinging it well behind him. But also just the Yankee lineups is another funny thing from this weekend. Right? We see Goldie batting leadoff for the first time. Yeah. We got Jazz cleanup.
So
they're going to keep messing around with this stuff, I'm sure. Yeah.
I tweeted this. People were laughing. Oh, that's not real. That really was the first bases empty intentional walk in March ever. Now, that is a very goofy stat that doesn't mean anything. I understand that.
Yeah.
But are not that many baseball games in March is the important thing to remember. And it's very rare for a guy to be walked with the bases empty. And that's just a very serendipitous crossover. But that's a real stat. Like that, I went on StatHead and I worked that out. That's real.
Believe
that's
it.
Not.
Yeah. No, a that's, bit. That's, bases empty intentional walks are you got to be some kind of hitter, and Aaron Judge is obviously that. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we return, run through some of the other sweeps from the weekend, and yes, our first mop of 2025. We'll be right back.
Mop. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. If Bat Chat had taken over opening weekend, we'd still be busy and still have a lot to talk about. It was a jam-packed weekend of action. We could do 3 hours worth of chitter chatter about what occurred. And
that's,
you know what?
That's how it works. That's the beauty of the sport. There, it's just every weekend. And by the way, we actually had less baseball this weekend than we normally do, because we had some weird, you know, off days on Friday. We had, you know, the Dodgers and Tigers didn't even play on Sunday, and the Mets and Astros didn't even play on Sunday. So I honestly feel like we got shortchanged. We should have had even more baseball. But I will say, had the Bats not taken over the weekend, we probably would have led with the San Diego Padres mopping the Atlanta Braves. Yes, for those unfamiliar, what is a mop? What does that mean? Well, a sweep is when you win all the games in your series. However, 4-game series, which are now increasingly rare, as since they have made it a balanced schedule where there are fewer division games, and generally it's much more common to have a 4-game series against divisional opponents and, of course, against teams in your league. It is 4-game series do not happen very often anymore. Each team has about 6 or 7, I believe, scheduled this season. And when you win all four games in a series, that is more than a sweep. That is a mop. When you welcome in a team or you go into their stadium and you win all four games, that should deserve higher recognition, different terminology. And so the mop was born by us on our road trip 4 years ago. And we were like, this is funny. People should bring mops to games when their team can win four games instead of bringing brooms for sweeps. And the Padres have given us our first mop of 2025 as the Atlanta Braves went in to Petco Park and just got shellacked. As the Braves offense, oh my goodness, was this a pitiful performance for the Braves bats. Get them some torpedo bats. Get them anything. I don't care what shape the bats are. They weren't working.
Get them a tennis racket.
As the Braves finished this series with 22 scoreless innings, they get shut out on Saturday and Sunday. Nick Pivetta, marvelous on Sunday Night Baseball. Randy Vasquez, who was one of the worst starting pitchers in baseball last year, he was awesome. Cease was pretty good. Fernando Tatis Jr. looks incredible. He's batting leadoff now again, which is awesome. He was not doing that. Obviously, we've seen him do that earlier in his career. He did not do it last year. He's batting leadoff, looks great. I believe Luis Arraez had zero hits, and they still managed to take care of this series handily. And it was just great. The Padres bullpen looks awesome. The Padre Petco Park, as we know, even after a kind of a tumultuous offseason, we were like, listen, that place is still going to be packed. Those fans are still going to be having a great time. And it was an awesome start to the season for San Diego.
I want the Padres to go 81-0 at home. Mm. Like, I never want them to lose at home. Ever.
Yeah.
It's the best. It's a great environment. They do such a good job there with the fan experience. And the Padres delivered. You know, I was low on this team entering the year and really high on the Braves, and I'm going to run a lap now.
Yeah, that's all right. Machado, a couple injury scares. He also still looks fine. Machado's now at the stage where he kind of always looks like he's like slightly limping.
But he swings too hard for someone.
Yeah.
Like, he swings too hard and too long and contorts his body so much for someone whose muscles maybe can't handle it.
Yeah, so I'm a little worried about his durability. But again, bullpen looks good. Jackson Merrill is sensational.
And yeah, Braves.
Really nothing.
Congrats.
Nothing good to say about the Braves at all. I don't.
That's not true. Oh. Spencer Schwellenbach.
Schwellenbach's dark horse. Awesome. Schwellenbach is awesome. Okay, there you go. Anything else? Anything other nice thing to say about the Braves?
Congrats. You get to go face Tyler Glass now in Dodger Stadium today.
Yes.
And then you get the Dodgers on the road.
Who are they going to after the Dodgers? Because as people pointed out, you know, last time the Braves started 0-4, they won the World Series. That was 2021. But
they got the Marlins at home. The 3-1 Marlins.
So that's true. That's true. Maybe that won't be so easy. Then they got the Phillies, Rays, and Jays. So we'll see. Braves, okay. Let's reset and go to Dodger Stadium. Speaking of Dodger Stadium, the Dodgers are still undefeated.
Never lost.
They take this 3-game series over the Tigers. Regular old sweep.
Sweep.
The highlight of this series, I'll be honest, I was asleep. I did not stay up for the Mookie Betts heroics Friday night. As they did not play on Sunday. Mookie Betts down to 160 pounds. We were like, man, is he going to be able to impact the baseball? And it turns out the answer is yes, as he has two homers, including a walk-off homer. And it was honestly a great reminder. We've talked about this before about Mookie. What is so amazing about Mookie is that he has, again, I've used this line on the show before, but I'll say it again. He has essentially perfected hitting in the way that, like, he doesn't need to be big and strong because he can.
He's not trying to hit the ball 400 feet.
He can't for the most part, right? We've seen him in a home run derby. It ain't pretty. And right now, but it doesn't matter because he can strike the ball at the perfect angle, at the perfect sweet spot, and it will go over the fence when he needs it to do that. That's what makes him one of the best of all time. And even when he's down to 160 pounds, he can take the pitch that he gets and hit it over the fence to help the Dodgers win. So it was a pretty astonishing showing for him. The Tigers, again, the lineups they're rolling out right now are not exactly probably the plan A. But also, it's not going to get that much better. You know, this Tigers lineup, we certainly had questions about beforehand. It's nice to see Torque looking decent. But the
torque looks a lot better.
Yeah.
There's some mechanical changes there that I like, you know, because I'm a hardo. I dug into the open side tape.
Oh, that's
last
good.
Night.
Okay. Yeah.
Picked it apart. I actually left the series feeling okay about the Tigers.
Okay. Yeah.
Bizarrely, starting the year in LA with the Dodgers just grooving is a tough start.
Flaherty was fine.
I think Flaherty
was
fine.
Flaherty was pretty good, right? Olson was like, okay. You know, you'd like the bullpen that was like so amazing last year to be a little bit better, but whatever. And then I guess the other big takeaway about, again, Mookie kind of bailing them out. Dodgers bullpen, not good. Tanner Scott does not look good, right? We got Vessi and Luis Garcia's pitching for some reason. He's not good. And then we got to talk about Rookie.
Cried.
We got to talk about Rookie.
Rookie cried. So Rookie pitched on Friday night and was awful.
Yeah.
Worse than
Notably
he looked.
Notably worse than in Tokyo.
In Japan, the fastball command was abysmal. He was missing arm side with the heater. Particularly the lefties just couldn't figure it out. And he was clearly frazzled throughout the entire outing. Gets removed in the second inning.
Yep.
I believe.
Yep, did not. Five outs.
Forgot to give Dave Roberts the baseball.
Noticed that. Did anyone point? I noticed that. Yeah, that was.
I think Fabian did.
Okay.
I think Fabian Ardai did at the Athletic. Yeah. And then there was a clip of him with cry eyes on the dugout railing.
Yeah. Hey, whether now, he was crying or not, certainly didn't look like he was in a great spot.
No.
It was clearly, yeah, I mean, obviously, it wasn't a good performance, and just look at it. I mean, he's feeling the weight of it all.
We are pro tears, particularly for men here on this podcast. Everyone should have a good cry once in a while. I cry all the time.
Yeah.
And if Rookie wants to shed a tear or two, that's his right. But I do think it is revealing in the following way. He's not ready for this right now. He's not ready for this right now. He, being on the Dodgers in this moment with those expectations is notable. Like, the Dodgers can afford for Rookie to figure this out at the big league level. They are such a, that is part of what they pitch to him, right? They're so talented, so deep that he can go out there and throw up stinkers and work on stuff and effectively use a big league game as a minor league development experience, and they can still win. Yeah. But is that what's best for his development right now? I'm not sure. There's an argument that he should just go down to Oklahoma City and start to figure some things out in a less pressure filled environment. Now, the alternative argument, which I think I do agree with, I think he should still be in the big leagues, is the only way he's going to learn how to pitch in the big leagues is to pitch in the big leagues. It's not like his stuff in Oklahoma City, the stuff is so good, he can just blow dudes away in AAA, and he needs to learn how to use that stuff against big league hitters.
I do not totally agree with that. I think to me, what's interesting is that the Dodgers, to your point, they do have the dynamic of they don't need him in the way that some of these other teams, the Blue Jays, right? The Padres that probably would have been like, or whatever. Like, there are a lot of teams where it's like, yeah, you would have been in the rotation no matter what.
He's starting on opening day for the White Sox.
They
all due respect to Schomburg.
Now, listen, I understand they wanted to start him in Tokyo. I get that. And that was still cool. And that's great. But they did not need to fast track Rookie in this way. They didn't. Not only because they can afford literally just if the full roster, they can obviously win without him. But like literally they have so many other pitchers that are more than good enough to fill in his spot. And when you consider him the long game, and what I'm confused about is kind of the talking out of both sides of their mouth with Dodgers, where they're simultaneously being like he is a work in progress, and also being like, yeah, like he's obviously in the rotation. Like, what do you mean? Why wouldn't he be in the rotation? It's like, okay, well, because he can't throw strikes and he has 1.5 pitches right now. So that's why. Now, I don't want to say, I'm not on two starts. I'm not ready to say like he needs, it's over. Like he's not ready right now. And I think the part I push back a little bit about, can he's only going to learn in the big leagues. I think the issues he's dealing with right now, like, I don't know if just continuing to roll that out in the big leagues is actively helping. And I think that there is a version where 5 starts in Oklahoma City in front of fewer people against worse hitters, where he can actually work on things, will put him in a position to come back and be more prepared to succeed. But either way, he does not look like a pitcher that is being put in a position to succeed. That is the simplest way to put it. That is the very simplest way to put it. Now, the team's going to be fine no matter what. We know that. But we all want to see Roki make... We know the arm talent is still there. We know he can be very good. How they proceed from here will be very interesting.
He could really use a road start in Miami in front of 20,000. Now, the problem is during his next start... So, let's just... His first career start in Japan. Second career start, Dodgers home game where they receive the rings in front of a sold out crowd. Third game in Philly, I believe, on Friday night.
Is it already announced for that he's doing that?
It's not announced.
Okay, I was going to say, we got going to the Nats after that. Let's maybe... That's
pushing back.
there's an opportunity there. We can push it a little bit. Let's get him on, you know, a weekday in DC. That may be a little bit easier than in Philly.
How many outs does he get on Friday night in front of a raucous Philly crowd?
This is what I'm saying. It's just like you're not. No, again, you could say, well, why are you babying this guy? But like we said,
he's a baby.
He's not making $300 million. He's making the minimum, and he's 23. I understand why the hype was there. And yes, he is one of the most talented players to ever come from Japan. But if you don't think he's a finished product, if you clearly know that he has stuff to work on, why are we pretending like he's already your number two starter? That's what I don't get. That is the part that I don't get. Again, Dodgers, they're amazing. They're going to win. They're 5-0. Maybe they sweep the Braves. Maybe they're going to win 120 games. That could all happen if Roki has a 100 ERA. Clearly, that's fine. But we know he is still an important character this season, and how they are choosing to handle him moving forward is interesting.
Last question. Over under 2.5 AAA starts this year for Roki Sasaki?
I'll say over.
Okay.
Say over on that.
And that's okay. If you said to me, hey, Jake, you can have any pitcher in the world under the age of 23, I would take Paul Skeens, mm-hmm. and then I would take Roki Sasaki.
Yeah. Interesting question. Let's move on from the Dodgers, who are 5-0. A lot of other good things. Tommy Edman looks unbelievable. Freddie Freeman looks great. We know they're going to be fine without Roki. All right. One more sweep. The Cardinals. What? Cardinals sweeping the Minnesota Twins. Did I watch much of the series? No. Do you look at the stats and say, wow, the Cardinals are, I mean, they just did everything well. They pitched well. The Twins were terrible on offense. Cardinals pitching was great. They had like a crazy number of two-strike hits. We got Arenado swinging well. We got some of the young guys swinging well. We got some of the pitchers looking good. And vibes are good in St. Louis, ? As I said at the start of the season, like, listen, this team probably has too much talent to actively tank. Are they in a situation where even in a transition year, they're going to have to make a tough decision in July if they are in the mix? Not to overreact after one weekend, but I think it is a reminder that the Cardinals still have a lot of good players.
This series brought us the first ever emergency UGLA in the history of baseball Barbacast. Wilson Contreras, first baseman for the St. Louis Cardinals, was spotted.
You spotted as if he was like, you know, at some grocery store and someone got him like on a secret camera. No, Wilson Contreras, while batting, or I guess in between pitches or right before his at bat, anyway, walking into the batter's box.
No. Yeah. And that is an important piece of context here. So he was eating his batting tape, right? The grip tape that was on the bat was coming undone, mm-hmm. and you see him notice it, rip it off with his mouth, and then take the tape and just eat it like it's a secret note and he's a spy.
Yeah.
It's like the scene in Severance season one, hell, he throws, you know, she tries to, whatever, no spoilers, but it was incredibly bizarre, and he just throws it right in his mouth instead of his pocket. Now, he was asked about this. Shouts out to John Denton at MLB.com, who had the bravery to confront Contreras about his bizarre decision. The clock was ticking down. He had to be in the box. And he panicked seeing the clock. And instead of doing something rational, he just threw it in his mouth. That's what happened. Quote, with this clock, you have to do things that are out of your control. And I had to do that instead of striking out. Wait. Well, I struck out anyway. but I'd rather strike out swinging rather by the clock. I don't think chewing the tape was a bad thing to do, but I was running out of time. I had no time.
But wait, but why did chewing the tape save time? I guess because he didn't.
It didn't. Jordan, it's an irrational decision. Okay. If I gave you 10, it's like the, clip of Billy Eichner, Name a Woman.
I understand. He was like, oh my God, I have to be in the box. What am I going to do with this tape? I'll put it in my mouth so that I, you know, can move on with this at bat. Sure.
Quote, that was a bad taste. Really bad, Contreras said with a laugh. I don't try to put pine tar or sticky spray on my bat, but it was disgusting. It was a bad taste. Look, we're talking about torpedo bats as the new technology. Edible grip tape. Okay, lizard skin.
Oh, yeah.
I'm telling you. Some sour apple grip tape so Wilson Contreras can have a little nosh while he's up at the dish.
Sure. I love
Contreras
what he's like.
Said it was the first time that he ever put bat tape in his mouth.
Well, lesson learned, my guy.
He just wants people to know he's not sitting at home just chowing down.
I don't normally eat my bat tape.
I don't normally do this.
All right. Two more series before we take a break.
Dude, it's like, you know, I don't usually like mushrooms, but the way that this was cooked.
Right. It's like, man. Two more series before we take a break. These were four-game series in which one team won, which means they won 3-1, which is better than winning 2-1. The Rangers take 3-4 over the Boston Red Sox. The Red Sox win on opening day, Willie Abreu, big day. And then after that, Willie Abreu was really the only Red Sox hitter that was showing up. Christian Campbell,
got his
first career home run. That was a very impressive swing. Happy for Christian Campbell. Other than that, though, and most notably, Rafael Devers, who we will now talk about. It was not a great showing for the Boston offense. Boston pitching was like pretty good. Richard Fitz was probably left in a little bit too long on Sunday, but generally pitched well. It's not like the Rangers offense was that awesome. Adolis Garcia looked awesome. I'm a little wary there. He looked amazing in April last year and then was terrible for the rest of the season. But Adolis looks great. Obviously, when he's swinging well, he's one of the more fun players to watch in baseball. DeGrom, he pitched. He looked good. He was like only throwing 96. The slider was cooking. Got a bunch of swings and misses. Very methodical from DeGrom. But the Red Sox offense was not in a position to be threatening anybody, let alone Jacob DeGrom. And they dropped 3 in a row to end the series.
Rafi Devers, run me through the numbers, please, Mr. Schusterman.
A little 0-for-16 piece with 12 strikeouts, 10 strikeouts for the first 3 games, a major league record. DHing for the first time. Oh, yeah.
Rafael Devers, over the weekend in the first 4 games, swung and missed 31 times, whiffed 31 times. The number 2 person on the list this season is Teoscar Hernandez, who has swung and missed 18 times in one additional game. Devers has nearly double. So like the third guy is Derek Hill with the Marlins, who's 4 games. So if you do like guys who've played in only 4 games, Devers is double.
Yeah.
Swings and misses.
And that's what
That is not like a tough weekend, couple of bad bounces. That is something is wrong here.
Okay. And so to that point,
his timing is totally off.
To that point. So you could say, hey, small sample, whatever. The two things that are more concerning. So the one is, okay, you can say the DH thing. Oh my God, he's DHing for the first time consistently. And he's adjusting to that role, which was not made official until the day before the season. That's possible. And clearly he's going to have to figure that out because the Red Sox are very committed to him not ever playing the field. So that is one thing he'll have to figure out. But what's more concerning is the fact that he was terrible for the last month and a half last season, dealing with these shoulder injuries that delayed the start to his spring training. He only played 5 games in the Grapefruit League. And again, unless he is like physically compromised in a way that we don't realize. I mean, I'm starting to think he is, which I don't know if that makes me feel any better or worse. You know, he was awful for the last month and a half last year before they shut him down in the middle of September because of the shoulder injury. I just don't know what to make of this, because to your point, when you're looking this bad, when you're this off, it's not like he's in a, you know, 0 for 15 with a couple hard lineouts. Like, no, looks helpless. He is too talented to where this is going to last for that much longer, unless, as I said, maybe he is way more injured than we realized, at which point that's just a much bigger conversation and issue for the Red Sox, because he's still batting second, and I would put him second too. But and obviously a lot of the other Red Sox hitters were not exactly doing anything either, so maybe it's a little harsh to spotlight on him, but because of everything else surrounding him, because of all the other context, I think this is a huge story for Boston early on.
The other 3-1 series is the Marlins over the Pirates. Now, the Marlins, 3 walk-off wins. Pirates, 3 walk-off losses.
That is how that
the
works.
Way I would.
Yep.
Yeah, but if I asked you what happened in the Marlins-Pirates series, the answer is the Pirates lost 3 times on walk-offs because their bullpen was abysmal. David Bednar, who is really a lovely guy,
it's just
Pittsburgh icon.
It's just like, think about how rough this was to watch last season. Like, it was like, oh, well, it can't get worse than this. I mean, last year was such a tough watch. It was so hard to watch him. One of the best closers in baseball in 2022 and 2023. He was automatic. Yes, he was doing it on bad teams, but it was like they have Bednar, Pittsburgh's own. You at least know if the Pirates happen to have the lead late in the game, David Bednar will come in and he will win the game for the Pirates. And last year, it went completely off the rails. He loses the closer job. They try to get his confidence back at the end of the season. And then the start of this year, spring, it was like, okay, is he going to be the closer again? I'm not sure. Well, yeah, of course. We'll give him a shot. I mean, he has 2 outings this weekend where he doesn't record an out. And the one, I mean, the defense was not helping him. Of course, the Pirates were just... it was a collective disaster for Pittsburgh, obviously. But from a confidence standpoint, like, how do you recover from this? Of course, he'll find a way. It's not like he'll never record now in the major leagues again. It's just so hard to watch after what happened last year. Maybe he wasn't going to return to being one of the best closers in baseball, but to see this be the start of a season is just so difficult.
The Marlins should go for it, dude. Mm. Last year, the Marlins got off to a rough start, and their new president of baseball operations, David Bednar, pulled the plug really early, trading away Luis Arraez.
Marlins are
3-1.
Sorry, you're tired. It's okay. You just said their new president of baseball operations, David Bednar, who was not the one that made those trades. It was Peter Bendix. I will say last year, what's funny is that the Pirates mopped the Marlins last year to start the season in Miami. That was how the season started last year. And we were like, oh, Pirates. Oh, nope. This was the opposite. First time in 100 years, a team has been walked off 3 times to start the season for their first 3 losses. The last team to do it, it was the Pirates, of course, in 1924. But for the Marlins, yeah, fighting fish. Why not? Let's go. Let's see what we can do. They, like, it's funny because it's not like you look at their stats and you're like, man, like, Marlins were. They played real well.
but
well enough to beat this version of the Pirates, which is obviously not a very good one.
Let's take a break.
Wait, I'm sorry. I have to say one more thing. Do you know how many bases the Pirates stole this weekend?
9.
15.
And lost 3 games.
I don't know what was going on. Nick Fortes, Rule 5 pick Liam Hicks, friend of the program. 15. Yes. They stole 15 bases. Stolen bases are up across the league, but it might just be this series. All right, we're going to take a break. When we return, we're going to turbo mode through the rest of the series from the weekend. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbercast.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. Let's run through the rest of the games from the weekend. We had 3 splits, 3 4-game series that were cut right down the middle. And we'll begin with Mariners Athletics.
Emphasis on Ath. The A's. Here's what happened in this series. The Mariners had 2 of the probably coolest home runs they'll have all season. The Randy Arozarena one on opening day. And the Julio Rodriguez almost out of the stadium go-ahead blast on Sunday. Otherwise, as usual, the Mariners offense was putrid. I believe they hit 175 in this series, but their pitching, correct, as usual, was good enough to keep them in three of the four games and come out with a split. So A's are fine. The Mariners looked like the Mariners. And yeah, I don't really have much else, but like, it was just, this was exactly what I expected. This is what it looks like. You know, cool to see some big swings from some of the big boys. But other than that, yep, it's Mariners are going to have to find a way to score more runs because four of their first series this year are at home. So they need to score more runs at T-Mobile Park.
Seth Brown, A's hitter, had a 5-pitch walk during this series where seemingly everyone missed it. This seems to happen like once a year where there's a 2-pitch strikeout or a 5-pitch walk or a,
I don't think 2-pitch strikeout ever happens, but, but 5-pitch walk happens shockingly often where nobody notices. And in this case, Gregory Santos got an extra ball,
and didn't which matter.
Was fitting for Gregory Santos got an extra ball and still walked him.
Ball five, don't lie. The one other thing from the series, just a shout out. Big league debut for Noah Murdock, yes, friend of the program. Yes. A's Rule 5 pick comes in a big spot in game three. Mm-hmm. Shoves.
Look good.
His wife, Savannah, is a buddy of mine, and she was like violently ill to the point that like she was not allowed to be near Noah. So she went to the game it's his big league debut. She went to the game in a mask. And was so sick, she took a nap outside the bullpen in the stands and had Mariners fans wake her up when he was coming in to pitch. So shouts out to Noah, shouts out to Savannah. It's just every time a pitcher you've never heard of makes their big league debut, there are a million people who are behind them who have been there for the journey. Mm-hmm. And I think that we lose sight of that sometimes, even us. And so it was cool to like have one of these where I tangentially know these people, right? Everyone, there are millions of these. And so it fires me up.
Mariners welcoming in the Tigers for a series this week, the winless Detroit Tigers. Let's move on to the Baltimore Orioles. Oh, baby. My prediction is looking real good as the Orioles have combined to allow and hit 13 home runs through their first four games. That is on pace for 526 home runs combined.
And what do you say?
I said 500. So we're feeling good, baby. Now, the Orioles pitching, which is part of this, not awesome. Tomoyuki Sugano left the game early due to cramping in both hands.
How that be that? Cramping in both hands is like when my wife used to just have too much caffeine. Like cramping in both hands? Look, I cycled from New York to Chicago. I know cramping. Okay? I know cramping.
You got no time for...
I know calorie cramping and electrolyte depletion. All right?
So
cramping in both hands is some weird stuff, baby.
Agreed. Speaking of leaving the game early, Max Scherzer was also unable to complete his outing as he had a thumb issue that then resulted in lat tightness. If you're confused about that, just trust Max Scherzer as he said, quote, it is 100, his lat soreness is, quote, 100% related to the thumb. How about this quote from Max Scherzer, who is, again, about as in tune to his body as anybody. This is from Shai Davidi.
I disagree with what you just said.
I mean, listen, this is what he said. This is from Shai Davidi. Max Scherzer says last soreness he experiences, quote, 100% related to the thumb. Felt discomfort and warmth, but tried to fight through it to save bullpen. Left the game when he felt, quote, imminent danger of significant injury. Then he said, I got to get this 100% before I pitch again. Don't mean to laugh at Max Scherzer being injured again because it sucks. He's a Hall of Famer. We want Max to be able to pitch. However, once again, I've said this before. It's incredible. He has had every possible injury that is not an elbow injury. Go through his MLB page. There is nothing that has not been injured that has not been the elbow. I don't know if that is just his curse. It's like, look, dude, fine. Your elbow will never be harmed. Your elbow, the baseball gods said, don't worry. Your UCL will remain intact. However, no promises on the rest of the body because you will have pain every which way. And now Max Scherzer, 40 years old, with a Blue Jays team that does not have any depth to replace him, will have to replace him soon.
I remember back in the day, Tim Duncan, I think, had a DNP old, did not play old, where he was removed or unavailable for a Spurs game, and the official reason given was old. That's where we're at with Scherzer at this point. Like, he's 40. Things are going to just come up and hurt. And that's why signing a guy at that age is a riskier proposition.
Yeah. Justin Verlander looked pretty good, though. I will say, on Saturday, JV, I'm feeling good about picking him over Scherzer. So
your JV over Scherzer pick, I am already ready to kind of give that in. One other takeaway from this Orioles series was Jackson Holliday hit a ball that it was like kind of an inside out swing that he hit 1,000 miles an hour to center field for a homer. It was the type of swing he did not do last year, really, at any point.
Well said.
Early takeaways for players at this point in the season. Did you do something that you physically were unable to do the year before? Mm-hmm. Did you hit a ball above your max? Did you throw a fastball above your max? Did you take a pitch in a location to a spot where you didn't do it a year ago? Holliday did that. Adley also looks great. He's swinging, looks a lot looser. Those are the positives from that series. The other split, Cubs, D-backs. A lot going on in this one. One of the coolest game-ending plays I've seen in a long time on Saturday from Dansby Swanson. Runner on second in a one-run game. Chopper to Dansby. Comes in, fields it, pump fakes to first. The runner rounds third, is caught off. It's Garrett Hampson. Dansby beelines toward all the way toward him, tags him out to end the game. He started like behind second base in this play and went quite a ways. Is this the type of play that to be a shortstop, you have to have elite baseball IQ? It's just kind of built in. J.P. Crawford had a really cool play, kind of similar to like this on a double play to end a game, I believe. It's great. Good for Dansby. But the highlight of this series was a Diamondbacks comeback on Sunday. The Cubs bullpen is active bad, but to the point that Eli Morgan allowed a RBI single to Ryne Nelson, a pitcher. The first base hit by a pitcher since Zach Greinke in the 2021 World Series.
I do not miss pitchers hitting at all. However, I am glad
I miss pitchers getting hits.
I do not miss pitchers hitting one bit. However, I am glad there is still a way in our game for this to happen, which is just you burn your bench really early and now you lose your DH. That is why Ryne Nelson was hitting in a big spot and he gets a knock up the middle. And the Cubs defense was awesome. Their offense looked a lot better than it did in Tokyo. But
Kyle Tucker,
their left-handed starters, Steele, Imanaga, Boyd, fantastic. Basically every other pitcher got torched. The Diamondbacks had 46 hits in these four games. Eugenio Suarez, 4 home runs, tied with the league lead with Aaron Judge. The D-backs, of course, the best offense in baseball last year. I know they have some different personnel this year, but still looking quite good. Cubs, a lot of questions on the mound.
All right, 2-1 series. Astros over the Mets. Two horrible offensive performances. The Mets
two have great the pitching performances. Worst... How do you want to spin it? How do you want to spin it?
I guess I'm a pessimist. Mets offense, worst OPS in baseball through three games, 476. Is this what you paid for? How long do the Mets need to be underwhelming for Juan Soto to get the Joey Votto treatment where it's like, you're not swinging enough. You got to believe in the RBI.
That's a great question because Juan Soto was, I know he struck out, you know, to end the game on opening day, but he hit his first homer, which was just vintage Soto, of course, in their win. Tyler McGill was good. Other than that, though, this was an Astros masterclass. Your guy Spencer Arrighetti looked great.
Believer.
Bullpen was pretty good. And by the way, Lance McCullers Jr. is like throwing hard and in AAA, like maybe coming back. That's pretty exciting.
Knees weak, Arrighetti on his sweater already. Mom's Arrighetti. The Rays take 2 out of 3 over the Rockies at home at the Stein. Their first home games outdoors in a long, long time. George M. Steinbrenner Field playing host, the low A Yankee Spring Training Yard. It's where the Rays will be all year. I got to say, not as odd of a look as I thought on television. It's the main camera that kind of shoots towards home plate looks like it could be anywhere to me. Now, when the ball is hit to the outfield, less so. Rays win game one on a walk-off by Cameron Meisner, a ball that was smoked. A lot of sell the team chance.
This is
from
important.
The crowd, which was interesting.
This is important because obviously sell the team chance or not. We have those in a few sports, few teams, whatever. In Oakland, very common. The difference is that in Oakland, who was never there ever and no fans ever actually saw him exist? John
Fisher. John Fisher.
John Fisher was never around. Stu Sternberg was there. And Stu Sternberg's in the suite right above everybody. And that's when the sell the team's chance started, is when the fans were like, oh, hey, there's the guy who is, you know, maybe the reason why all these things have not gone as smoothly as we would like. Now, whether that's true or not, whatever, that's the fan perception. And so the fact that Stu Sternberg, I mean, I guess you could give him credit for, quote unquote, facing the music, unlike John Fisher, who you literally never saw ever throughout this whole Oakland disaster. But it is a more interesting and more direct interaction in a way that we did not really see in Oakland, for better or for worse. And so I think that is something to certainly monitor, the fans' reaction there. But, you know, Rays take 2 of 3 over the Rockies.
Angels take 2 out of 3 over the White Sox. We won't linger on this one for obvious reasons. Funniest part of this was the rain delay. Now, grounds crews are working their butts off, and when they fumble the bag, we feel bad for them, and yet we shall also laugh. During a rain delay on Sunday, the White Sox tarp got stuck, kind of tangled up in itself, which resulted in a hilarious scenario where smaller tarps that are used to cover bullpen mounds and the pitcher's mound at home plate were needed to cover the first baseline from the rain. And the picture from friend of the program, Sam Blum, is so funny. And it is like, this could maybe have happened anywhere. That's not a dome, but it did happen to the White Sox, and that's funny.
Yeah. White Sox starting pitching was very good. Offense was very bad. That's kind of how it was last year, which is a little ominous. But Angels and White Sox, those teams are going to be pretty bad for most of the season. The Guardians take 2 of 3 over the Royals. Jose Ramirez missing the series finale as he hurt his wrist. Hopefully that is not as serious. Kyle Manzardo hit another home run against the left-handed pitcher. That was very impressive. Guardians bullpen.
I like...
not feeling awesome about that. Obviously, we know they're not going to be as good as last year, but Clase looks shaky and Seawald gave up runs, and we'll see there. But Guardians still find a way to win this series.
Manzardo, there are not many players where you and I like disagree, you know, where we have differing opinions on a dude. Like, I think Manzardo is a roll 55 kind of guy, and you think he's more of like a 45 kind of guy.
Yeah, 45 and plus, 50.
45 plus.
I mean, like again, a good, you know, DH. Well, you know, if you're just a DH,
and the bar's high, high for a guy like that. But I think it's a very good bat, and you think it's like fine.
Yeah.
Good start for me.
Yeah.
Vinny P triple, hilarious. You know, a guy's not supposed to hit a triple when he gets to third and he's just lying on the ground exhausted and needs oxygen. And that's what Vinny had on his triple. Two more. Phillies over the Nats, taking 2 out of 3. Nats starting pitchers looked really good.
Yeah, Mitchell Parker.
But
looks solid.
Pretty good. Great. I don't really have a lot else to say about the series.
No, I mean, Kaber Ruiz batting cleanup looks fantastic. Nathaniel Lowe, 3 hits and a homer on Sunday.
Kaber needs to do this for more than a week for me to believe. There might not be a player in baseball right now that I believe in less, to be honest.
Okay. You could have said that 4 days ago. I don't know why you would go out of your way to say that after the weekend he just had, but that's fine.
Because I have courage.
Dylan Cruz, I believe, is 0-for, also similar to Rafi Devers, not looking awesome offensively. But we believe in Dylan Cruz. That's okay, Dylan. Don't you worry. And then, yeah, Aaron Nola. I mean, you know, that happens to Aaron Nola. So this is such an Aaron Nola line. 5 1/3, 6 hits, 5 runs, no walks, 8 strikeouts, 2 homers. Oh, yeah.
Badass.
He's back, baby. anyway, Phillies, of course, striking out all weekend long. But they win the series. Last one. San Francisco Giants over the Cincinnati Reds. Robbie Ray, my key player for the Giants coming into the season. Perfect game through 5 innings. Gavin Lux broke it up, I want to say, 4.5 seconds after I turned the game on. So that was very funny. Other than that, it was a very unremarkable series for everybody involved, I got to say. Heliot Ramos already has 2 home runs, which is cool. The Reds' offense is not fantastic. Matt McClain had a big weekend. especially on Saturday. So that is very good to see because I love Matt McClain. Other than that, the Reds are not awesome right now. Tito will continue to do Tito things, and that will be interesting. Oh, wait. One more Red stat. This is from the Reds radio broadcast. This is from Joe Daneman from Fox 19, Cincinnati. The Reds have now lost 32 consecutive series when losing the first game of a series. That's hard to do. So they have not 32 times they have not been able to come back and be like, you know, oh, drop the first game. Hey, we can bounce back, win two in a row. That's concerning. Anyway, hopefully they can break.
Some teams just have that fight in them. Some teams don't.
My last thought on this whole weekend, Jake. What is one of my general kind of mantras for baseball? How do I view the sport? I know this is so broad, but you'll know what I mean when I actually say it.
What a dumb question. Please just tell me.
All the players are good and all the teams are bad.
All the players are good and all the teams are bad.
This is how I choose to view baseball when teams collectively are embarrassing themselves left and right, whether it be the Pirates, whether it be the Cubs on Sunday, whether it be the Angels and White Sox trading turns. But the players, I mean, we love the players. The players,
they're great.
The players are amazing at baseball. And when I watch these players, teams are terrible. I'm like, but the teams, oh my God. I mean, is anybody good? I mean, so far I count maybe three teams that are like good. Other than that, pretty much, I think at least 25 teams at some point this weekend, I said, man, this team sucks. And so a great way to start the year and maybe kind of appropriate for how the season was projected by FanGraphs. Okay. Anyway, that's all. Thank you to producer Colin Brennan for waking up early with us on this Monday to make this show possible. Thank you, Jake. I know you're going right back to bed after working hard this weekend. Everyone go read Jake's story on the Torpedo Bats. You will learn something. I'm sure we will talk about the more later this week. You can email us baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. Anything else? No?
Bat.
Thank you for listening, everybody. Bye.